Welcome to a one-hour broadcast to help you make a decision as to who will fill the new 34th District State Assembly Representative for the North Woods. This is Ken Krall, News Director at WXPR Public Radio and moderator for this forum. Joining me are four candidates seeking the seat opened when incumbent Republican Dan Meyer decided not to run again. We have in alphabetical order independent candidate Todd Albano from Woodruff, independent Kevin Fitzpatrick from Minocqua, Republican Rob Swearingen from Rhinelander, and Democrat Merlin Van Buren, also from Rhinelander. Our media panel at the WXPR studios is WJFW-TV anchor and reporter Matt Doyle, North Star Journal editor Craig Manley, Wisconsin Public Radio's anchor and host of Route 51, Glenn Moberg, and reporter Kyle Rogers from the Northwoods River News. Hello to all of you.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever.
Anyway, the ground rules for the forum are straightforward. Each candidate will have a two-minute opening statement, then we'll take questions from the media panel. Each candidate will have up to 90 seconds to answer with the option of a 60-second rebuttal for the other candidates if desired. We will have each candidate give a one-minute closing statement, again in alphabetical order. And we will begin in alphabetical order with the opening statements, and our first person to give their opening statement will be Todd Albano.
Thank you, and hello. I would like to say that I believe that the duty of an elected official is to represent the people, not to bring an agenda or a personal opinion into a political race or a campaign. And I think that I exhibit a lifetime of volunteer activity, starting in the Cub Scouts, moving up to the United States Army, continue today as an EMT and a firefighter, do a lot of volunteer work in the community, at the church and the school. And I've always taught my kids to know the true heart of a man, to look not at his actions, but at his motivations. And I have a lifetime of public service, and that's what I think best suits this position, especially at this time in history. And I think there's no better time than the present to solve the problems in front of us. And we need somebody who is doing the right thing for the right reason. And I know in my heart that I fill that position 100%. So I'm looking forward to the opportunity to do what I can for the community, as I've always done. And I'm sure that no matter who we get in there, they will do a wonderful job. I just think there are quite a few differences in philosophies and actions, and I think the people have a definite choice in front of them.
Okay, thank you, Todd Albano. Kevin Fitzpatrick.
Well, first off, I want to start off, give you a little background. I've been a resident of the Northwoods for about 25 years, so I haven't lived up here my whole life, but I've had a chance to live in different parts of the state. I've lived in the southern part of the state. I've lived in the western part of the state, also lived in the central part of the state. So I've seen a lot of Wisconsin, and I've really come to know and love the Northwoods. I'm married. I've got three children, one who is a senior in high school. My youngest is a seventh grader this year, and then my middle one's a freshman in high school. And so a lot of, you know, what I've done in the last few years has been really spending a lot of time with my children and making sure they're academically successful, successful as athletes, successful as good citizens for the in our communities. I'm a teacher and I'm a coach, and so one of the things I think that I bring to the table is the ability to bring groups together. From my coaching career, I've been part of really some successful athletic programs at Lakeland. In my teaching career, I do something really interesting, and that's I work with our disadvantaged youth. I work with kids who have come from gang backgrounds, who have come from there were teenage parents who have come from drug and alcohol abuse issues. And so I've had to work with a lot of families who have really struggled for the years. And I think I've been pretty successful at helping them become good citizens of our community as well. I jumped into this because I just feel that our legislature in Madison has kind of lost touch of regular Wisconsinites. I think we've got to the point now where it's really become a lot about maintaining political power and not really taking care of our citizens. And so while I've leaned in the Republican vein for most of my voting career, I just felt at this point in time, if I was going to run for an office, I had to run as an independent because I just felt that's where my heart was. I'm a person who really believes in honesty and integrity, and I believe that that's something that I can bring to the office if I'm elected.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. Rob Swearingen.
Thanks, Ken. I want to thank WXPR and for the invitation to get our message out to the 34th Assembly voters. I think this is a great avenue, a great forum to do that with. First of all, my name is Rob Swearingen. I am from Rhinelander. I was born here in Rhinelander in 1963. I am a 1981 graduate of Rhinelander High School. I own and operate the Al Jan Dinner Club here in Rhinelander for almost 2 decades now. My wife Amy and I, we've been married for 20 years. I've got 2 daughters. One just graduated Rhinelander High School just this past session, and my youngest daughter is a sophomore in Rhinelander High School currently. I know what it's like to run a small business, clearly, for 20 years. I'd like to say that I'm a successful small businessman. I know how to balance a budget. I know what it's like to have employees. I know what it's like to make a payroll, and more importantly, have those employees depending on you for their living. I feel that the state of Wisconsin is a big business, and I think you need a businessman down in Madison, similar to myself. Obviously, you cannot spend more than what you take in. And I think that's one of the rules that we should be following down in Madison. I think that they're on track right now. I'd like to be part of that as things continue in the next session. Keep in mind, I'm not running for the last session. That's over and done with, and I'm running for this next session. And so we want to help Wisconsin, and specifically the 34th Assembly District, move ahead. Currently, I represent, I'm the president of my trade association. It is an elected position, elected by my peers. So as I sit here today, I also represent about 5,000 small businesses across the state of Wisconsin. And believe me, I've heard the echo of struggle in business and in members of the community. And I think the last thing we need right now in this economy is to have big government and more regulation and more taxes reaching into our pockets. So I'm applying for the job of the 34th Assembly District Representative to the voters here in the 34th Assembly District, and looking forward to their support on November 6th.
Thank you, Rob Swearingen and Merlin Van Buren.
Okay, first of all, thank you to WXBR for putting this forum together. Thank you to Ken, Matt, Craig, Glenn, and Kyle for being here this evening. My name is Merlin Van Buren, and I am running as a Democrat for the State Assembly. I am running to give you the representation you deserve in Madison. I was born and raised on a small dairy farm near Waupun. We lived in an old farmhouse. On those cold winter mornings, I can remember waking up to not just frost on the windows, but frost on the walls of my bedroom. My parents worked hard to provide for our family, but times were tough. I grew up like a lot of you, on hand-me-down clothes and second-hand bikes. But somehow we managed. And even though we didn't have a lot, I always knew that my parents loved me. Throughout my life, I have tried to be that same type of husband and father. As I knock on doors and talk to people, I see that same love for family and community. You deserve to have someone in Madison who is looking out for you and your family. I want to be that person who you trust to represent you and your family in Madison. So thank you for taking the time to listen into this program, and I plan to convince you that I am the best candidate to represent you, your family, your schools, your community in Madison.
Thank you, Merlin Van Buren. Now we go to our first question, and the way it works is media panelist directs it toward one, and then everyone gets a chance to respond. Kyle Rogers with the first question for Todd Albano.
If elected, what specifically would you do to address the recent divide in the political environment in Madison?
I don't see any divide among people. I only see a divide among political parties, which is why I'm not running for one. We are all in this together as residents of the state of Wisconsin, and whatever benefits one helps everybody, and what hurts one of us hurts all of us. So whatever solutions we devise and whatever we collectively decide we should do as a group of people, we all move together on the same bus, if you will.
Okay. Next, Kevin Fitzpatrick.
I think one of the things we need to work for is the opportunity for people to work together. We've become so divided politically. Everything to me seems right now about political power. It's no longer about serving the people. It's making sure that we maintain power, that we maintain office. And again, that's why I chose to go the independent route. We need to look at ways to be fiscally responsible. We can't spend more money than we have, but also we need to look for ways to make sure that we're caring for people. To make sure that we take care of our disenfranchised youth, our disenfranchised families. And so as an independent, I guess one of the advantages that I bring to the constituency is that I can vote for legislation based on its merits. I'm not tied to a political a party line or a political party. I can say, you know what, this suggestion here brought up by the Democrats, great idea, let's go for it. Or this brought by the Republicans, great idea, let's go for it. And hopefully, if there are more people of that like mind, we'll get more done in Madison.
Okay. Kevin, thank you. And Rob Swearingen.
Well, clearly we have a divide in the state of Wisconsin, you know, certainly after the last session. There were some tough decisions down there, which certainly added to the controversy. I guess the new concept, or a concept that I certainly would work for, is actually crossing the aisle. What a concept. When we need to get some compromise done, we need to get something done for the benefit of the voters of the 34th Assembly District, on occasion you're going to have to cross the aisle and entertain some new ideas. That shouldn't be a very revolutionary idea, and it's something that we could use to restore some civility down there in the Capitol.
Okay. Merlin Van Buren.
I think one of the keys is to get to know each other on a personal level. I think that helps to bridge the divide between the candidates, between the parties. The long-term solution is really to get money out of elections. And I think that's what we have to look at long-term, is get the special interest money out of the elections, whether it be Madison or Washington, because that is what is controlling our representatives in Madison and Washington, and that is what I think is contributing to the divide between the two parties and causing the lack of agreement to the lack of compromise. So long term, we need to get money out of the elections. Short term, we need to get to know each other on a personal level and find the individuals that we can work with, that we have common interests, common goals, and find compromise that we can agree on.
And I offer anyone rebuttal time if they want, if you want to say anything additionally. Okay, well, next we'll go to Glenn Moberg, and you'll direct your question toward Kevin Fitzpatrick.
Mr. Fitzpatrick, a Dane County judge has struck down essential parts of Act 10, Governor Walker's collective bargaining law, saying the act is unconstitutional in part because it allows state lawmakers in Madison to tell local city councils, county boards, and school boards how they have to bargain with their unions. I would like to get your reaction to the judge's ruling. If you agree that the law should have been struck down, how will those local units of government balance their budgets if they have to negotiate more expensive agreements with their workers? And if you disagree with the ruling and you're in favor of Governor Walker's collective bargaining law, tell me how that fits in with the traditional Republican view of limited government and local control. To have politicians in Madison telling local city councils, school boards, county boards, and unions how they have to do their business?
Well, first off, let me start off. It's an interesting question that I get thrown, that one, being in that sector. I truly believe that Act 10 was not a fiscal measure, rather it was a political measure. It was an opportunity to destroy or try to cripple a political enemy. And so with that being said, I think that we as educators, we as public servants, we understand the needs of our state. And yes, you know, when push comes to shove, I mean, we all want to try and hang on to what we can for our families. But in the big picture, I think we all understand that we're all in this together. We need to take some cuts. We need to, you know, help our state move along fiscally. I think that the things that were put into that measure are really crippling our school districts, as a matter of fact. Right now, they can't raise the funds they need. They've had so much money taken away that they can't maintain the programs and services. My wife works in a district in Woodruff. Their school cannot buy supplies this year because they just don't have the funds to buy supplies. I would consider that many school districts, while in the short term this was a good measure to save costs, in the long term it's going to cripple many school districts, and we'll start to see school districts going under.
Okay, Rob Swearingen.
Well, talking about current events. well, clearly, I guess we have to wait and see what happens here. This judge is a Dane County Circuit judge, and certainly handed down that ruling. As I understand it, the State Attorney General, J.B. Van Hollen, now has asked for a stay in that ruling. And I would imagine that the judge, he's asking the same judge that passed the ruling for the stay. And I guess we'll wait and see how the judge is going to react on a stay on his own ruling. And then we would look forward, I guess, to the next level of court, whether it's appellate or right to the Supreme Court. So I guess it's wait and see at this point.
How do you feel about the act? That's the question.
Say it again.
How do you feel about Act 10?
Oh, Act 10 in general?
Are you in favor of it or opposed to it?
I was in favor of it, sure. Not necessarily the way that it came down. You know, Governor Walker, maybe he should have done a little more education on the whole act itself before it was released and the turmoil erupted in Madison. I think had he spent maybe a little more time unveiling it, maybe it would not have been met with so much resistance.
Okay, Rob Swearingen, Merlin Van Buren.
I am a member of the Rhinelander School Board, so I have been directly affected by Act 10, much like Kevin, but on a different level. And I can tell you that it did cause big changes, and I feel negative to the way we operate. Like Kevin said, at the state level, they don't seem to have. Don't seem to feel that the local governments can handle their jobs. And as a school board member, we can do our job. We just need the opportunity. The cuts that were made in funding caused us to have to lay off teachers. We did not see the savings that Act 10 was supposed to give us because we had already made the changes in health insurance that were supposed to give us the large savings. So now this next year we're looking at about $3 million to cut from our budget, which we're working on right now. So I think it was a political move. It was purely political to take away the power of the unions, especially in elections. And I am not for taking away the rights of the union.
Okay, and Todd Albano.
Okay, I am not opposed to fiscal responsibility by any means. I think that is a must for any leadership, business owner, government body, and I can't imagine that we strayed as far away from that as we did. That being said, I am not in favor of doing it in the way that Act 10 provided, nor in how it was laid out and the amount of controversy that it caused. I believe that there are many, many problems with school funding, and they started long before unions. I think that my wife and I were members of the Northwoods Coalition for School Funding Reform, and this is something that we've been studying and working on for many, many years. And the problems negotiating with the unions are one in many. And I don't think that unions are a problem any more than political parties are a problem or religious groups are a problem. I think anytime you get a group of people together, they strive for more power. That's human nature, and those are things that we have mechanisms in place to deal with, and there are much more appropriate ways than criminalizing school teachers, for instance, which is a lot of what Act 10 did, is made teachers seem like somehow they were villains or they were the enemies. And if you look at where Wisconsin's been the last several years with education, I believe number two in the nation, it seems to me like school teachers are some of the only people in the state that were actually doing their job. So, you know, that we did that, to me, was beyond my understanding, and I think we should look at going in a different direction to solve our problem.
Okay, that was Todd Albano. Any rebuttal at this point?
The thing I want to point out is the unions were willing to make the cuts before Act 10 was even put in place. They were willing to pay into their insurance costs. They were willing to cover part of the retirement benefits. So there was really no need for Act 10.
Okay. Anyone else? Craig Mandley will have the next question for Rob Swearingen.
Rob, it's advantageous that I get to ask you this question because recently you put out a press release that criticized the stay in the use of dogs for the wolf hunt that is coming up here in October. Do you agree with how the DNR is implementing the wolf hunt, and if you do, why?
I was okay with that, yeah. Thanks for bringing that up, Craig. The wolf hunt was a bipartisan piece of legislature that they passed the last session with a lot of work on both sides. And unfortunately, it got kind of waylaid by an environmental group, and the issue was the dogs. And I do support Second Amendment rights, clearly. And as you talk to the sportsmen's groups, The dog issue is what they claim. They say that there won't be any hunting at all if they can't use their dogs. So I guess I would defer to the sportsmen's groups to say that they know what they're doing. And so that's where I stood on that position. I did take a heat on that, a couple of letters to the editor, which is fine and which is understandable. But I do stand behind what's happening down there in the way that law was passed. I had a conversation with the law's author, Representative Souter, and he gave me a little more understanding on how the law was developed and what the work that went into it. And that is why I took the position I did.
Okay, next, Merlin Van Buren.
I think what this law shows is that we've got to put science ahead of politics. And what happened in this case is politics came ahead of science. And there was no input from the DNR into this legislation, contrary to what they claim. And I happen to know that on a good basis. What we need to do, I don't disagree with the wolf hunt, but the regulations and how it was written should have come from the DNR up to the legislature, not the other way around. And so that's what I disagree with. I don't disagree with the hunt, but we need to do it the right way. There is no other state that allows dogs to be used off of a leash. So Wisconsin would be the first and the only one to allow dogs to be used in such a way. And wolf hunts are very successful. Not as successful as deer hunting. It's going to be very difficult to get a wolf, but it can be done without free-running dogs.
Merlin Van Buren, Todd Albano.
This is a very contentious issue. Where I stand, right in the middle, I don't hunt, nor am I opposed to the right of people to hunt, and I am all for Second Amendment rights. When it comes to hunting with dogs or hunting with another animal, I think there are a lot of questions that should be answered and considered before decisions are made, and I agree with Merlin that it should be based more on science and experience than it is the desire of people to do things. A lot of the arguments that I hear are akin to, I should be able to go downtown Rhinelander and fire my gun in the middle of town because it's America and I have a gun and I can shoot it. You can't do everything you want to do everywhere you want to do it. And I think that good science and good reasons and good ethics should all go in decision making. So this is something that I think we're going to be talking about and potentially changing for a long time to come.
And Kevin Fitzpatrick.
Again, I stand in support of hunters' rights and Second Amendment rights. I'm in favor of this ruling that has come down as far as not allowing use of dogs. At this point in time, I'm not truly sure I'm in favor of wolf hunting. I honestly believe that the wolf hunt is a political move. Again, it's not a conservation move. I mean, we've always had this thing about wolves. We don't like that there's something else could be another predator out there. We want to be the top dog all the time. And I think that there are a lot of things that come out. There was just something in the Lakeland Times just recently about what was perceived to be a wolf attack that the conservationists said most likely wasn't. But until we have more evidence that that we really are having wolf issues, and I don't think the evidence is totally out there. Yes, there may be some random things, but to go forward with the wolf hunt, I don't truly believe is necessary at this time.
Okay, any rebuttal? Any you want to say?
Just in addition, Kyle, didn't you end in your paper today, wasn't there a front page news story on a wolf attacking it?
Yeah, we ran the same story that we had written in the Lakeland Times as
okay,
well.
Okay, sure, yeah.
Okay, well, let's go to the next question, this one from Matt Doyle. And this one goes to Merlin Van Buren.
Okay, so everyone talks about creating jobs. It's one of the things that many politicians mention when they're campaigning, so understanding that government really doesn't create jobs, what would you do if elected to the 34th Assembly seat to create jobs up in this area to make it a place where people can come up here and expand a business and hire people from this district?
Well, what you mentioned in there is really the first key. We have to make this an area where people want to live. That's the key to growing jobs up here. We're not going to bring in large corporations that are going to bring in hundreds of jobs. What we can create are jobs or individuals who entrepreneurs want to start their own businesses up here, which are going to be small businesses. And so first of all, we have to have the infrastructure. We have to have the good schools, the good roads, good electricity, and good water services that startup companies need. Right now, we see PrintPak expanding here in Rhinelander, and one of their needs was a good water system, and that's what Rhinelander had, and so they were able to expand in Rhinelander. So we have to have good infrastructure, we have to have a place where people want to live, and then opportunity. And I think the opportunity, what we need is venture capital. Capital available for just very small startup companies, one, two individuals. I talked to one person up here recently that wanted to start a company, needed $10,000 to get the equipment he needed. Couldn't get the loan to start that business. If that money was available, he would have been able to buy the equipment he needed, start a business. Maybe he would have added one, two employees. And that's most of the jobs that we're going to find up here, small startup companies.
Okay. Thank you, Merlin. Next, Todd Albano.
I think we've got a lot of potential for job creation and growth that already exists and that we're possibly not utilizing. As you drive west out to Forest and Florence counties, you hear a lot of people talk about the timber that they have and the fact that they're not allowed to harvest it, which is shameful because we know that managed forestry works and doesn't degrade the landscape and is something that we already have at our fingertips. I also think that we have a rapidly deteriorating infrastructure, which we could put a lot of people to work repairing, that we all benefit from, that it gives us a great value for our dollar and helps enhance the area, which brings other jobs here. Things like high-speed internet is another thing that allows a lot of people to work from home, which is a lot of today's small businesses and business interests that people have that we more than have the potential for here that we're perhaps not capitalizing on. So I think if we start with all of the things that we already have and the small things and work our way up, that we will build the type of communities where people want to come and live and have their businesses.
Okay. Thank you, Todd. Next, Kevin Fitzpatrick.
You know, we live in a wonderful place. I mean, we have probably, and I've traveled all over the country and this is where I want to be. I mean, the lakes, the woods. I mean, there is no place nicer in the United States. And people want to come here. People want to be here. And so we need to find ways for them to come here and be here. And a couple of things that I've thought much of, I think manufacturing as we once knew it is dead. I mean, I believe we'll still have manufacturing in this country. We'll still have manufacturing in the state. But the large-scale manufacturing that we once had, that's not going to happen anymore. What we need to build upon is our timber industry here. That still exists, and that still can be strong. We need to build upon the fact our tourism industry is wonderful because people do want to come here and vacation. But the other thing is, as was mentioned earlier, you know, telecommuting, people using technology to do their jobs, technology companies, bringing companies up here. Perhaps there's some company that wants to have a service center or something in our area. I think there are ways to bring jobs and utilizing technology. And people can come and enjoy our Northwoods. Technology companies aren't going to do damage to our environment. They may take up space. They may need some resources like, as we said, like water and sewer and things. But for the most part, they're fairly benign in what they will do to our environment. But yet they'll bring lots of opportunity to people in our communities.
And Rob Swearingen?
Well, I tell you, I believe that northern Wisconsin is probably the best kept hidden secret gem in the state of Wisconsin. And I think what we need to do is promote what we have up here. We've got great schools. We've got a quality workforce. And I think we need to promote industry to come up here. Northern Wisconsin is a great place to live, a great place to raise a family, a great place to retire. But it's also a great place to start an industry. And whether it's large or small, we've got to promote what we have up here. Clearly, I'm in the tourism business. So obviously, I would like to work closer with the Department of Tourism. I've talked to Stephanie Klett down there, and we've had this discussion that we want to work close with her should we get elected to the 34th Assembly. And we need to promote northern Wisconsin, get the industry up here. Let's get some good quality, family-sustaining jobs, and that will help the tourism industry as well. So it would be a great package.
Any rebuttal? Well, we're about halfway through our forum. This is the candidates for the 34th District Assembly seat and media panel here, and we've gone through one whole round of questions already. So it's time for our second round, and we're going to start again with Kyle Rogers for Todd Albano.
What are your thoughts on the state school superintendent's fair funding for our future proposal, and do you think it would fix the broken school funding formula that is so often talked about? Beyond that, do you have any other ideas on how school funding should be addressed at the state level?
I think it sounds like a really good program, but we've had a lot of other things that sounded like good programs in the past. I think it's a great start. I don't think it will correct all of the problems that we have, nor near all of the problems that we have with the school funding formula. I think one of our biggest problems with our school funding formula is how we go about doing it. If I'm going to build a deck, I don't start out and go, okay, I got $100, what can I get out of it? I have a list of materials, I know it's going to cost me $300, and then I go about building the deck. When we're funding our school system, we don't look at what we want to get done and then figure out how much it's going to cost us. We set a budget, and then we try and get out of it what we can, and we've got the State Department of Public Instruction that sets the curriculum, basically the legislature that sets the budget, and then we've got the teachers that are held accountable for results, which is, in my opinion, a formula that's destined for failure. So I think there are many, many things we can do to correct the problem and get a lot more value for our dollar out of our education system.
Kevin Fitzpatrick.
You know, I'll be honest, even being in education, I'm not fully aware of that proposal, but I can tell you the property tax is not the way to do it, which we currently have. We need to look at other ways. We need to look at some income-based ways of raising funds for our schools. I mean, we in the Northwoods here, we have, again, we talked about the gem that we have, and so our property values are extremely high up here compared to similar areas, but yet we know the incomes of our residents are not, and because of that, the state thinks we have all this money that we can spend on schools, and we really don't have that. Again, you look at the Arborvitae-Woodruff District, has high property values, but a lot of state land. They truly do not have the funding that they need to run their schools because of the current formula. So we need to have some income measure thrown in there as well as the property tax measure to try and balance things out. You have richer school districts in the southern part of the state that are getting tons of money because maybe their incomes aren't as high, or their property values aren't as high, but their incomes allow those people to have higher values in their schools.
And next, Rob Swearingen.
Clearly, the school funding formula has been an issue as I go around the district, especially here in Rhinelander, because Rhinelander is facing, as Merlin indicated, the $3 million deficit in this next cycle. So I think it certainly needs to be looked at. It currently is based on property. Income is an option. So up here, we are property rich and income poor. And so it's very difficult when you go up, especially going up to like the Boulder Junction area, for example. So it's been a tough one. I would be more than open to looking at some way to reformulate that current system, keeping in mind that anytime you're going to mess with the current formula, you're going to affect not just northern Wisconsin, but obviously down in southern Wisconsin. And you can bet there's going to be pushback, whether it's from the Republicans or the Democrats, there's going to be pushback. And so it's going to affect everybody across the state. The Evers plan, I'm not overly familiar with. I can tell you what it does, though. Currently on your property tax bill, you have a school levy tax credit. And what the Evers plan would like to do would be eliminate the school levy tax credit, throw it into the equalization formula. And so to me, that would indicate some sort of a tax increase. And I would not be for that particular part of the plan. However, that would be about $900 million, which would be funding the Evers plan. Now, Superintendent Evers certainly knows what's going on in his educational system, and I respect that gentleman. But I'm not sure that that plan is what we need. In addition to that, I think it shifts about $20 million right down to Milwaukee, and that isn't going to help us up in northern Wisconsin as well.
Okay, thank you, Rob Swearingen. And Merlin Van Buren.
If you look at school funding, yes, it's definitely broken, and here in Rhinelander we're seeing that firsthand. The levels for funding were set, and the year before that, Rhinelander gave $1 million back to the taxpayers. So we were spending less than everyone else, and those were the levels that funding was set at. So Rhinelander started being one of the lower-funded schools. So we need to fix the formula. We need to have parity across the state. Students up here are worth as much as they are in southern Wisconsin. Up here, we're considered property rich, and that's why, like, Lakeland gets basically zero state funding,
It all comes from property taxes. In Rhinelander, we're on the way to zero state funding. So we need to bring up, I would like to say, bring up the basement or bring up the lowest level of funding. And the EVERS plan does that. Now, Rob talked about the credit on your taxes. One of the problems with that credit is 26% of that money, credit on property taxes, goes to out-of-state residents. Why are we giving a tax break to out-of-state residents on their property taxes? What I would like to see is, yes, take that credit away and instead apply it through the homestead tax credit. Give it to the people that really need it, the low-income people, the retirees that are living up here and need the help on their property taxes. So let's take that credit away, put it into the schools, and then give it back to the people that need the credit on their property taxes. So, yes, the funding formula needs to be changed, needs to be improved. The EVERS plan is a good start. I don't agree with the 1% sales tax because that's a regressive tax, but there's other parts of the plan that we can deal with.
Okay, thank you very much, Merlin. Any rebuttal? Okay. Next, I'm going to change things up a little bit here. Glenn, you're next, and I'll have you start with a question for Rob Swearingen first.
Okay. Mr. Swearingen, do you favor changing mining regulations in the state of Wisconsin in order to allow an iron mine in the Pinoki Range south of Lake Superior? Specifically, should our mining laws be changed to accommodate the desires of just one company? If it means hundreds of good-paying jobs in the region, how do we make sure the environment is protected? And how do we include Wisconsin's tribal governments in the decisions and discussions leading up to a new law?
Well, first of all, we definitely need that mine. And we already have a tough mining law. And if we need to look at aspects of that law, then that's what we have to do. But what I can see is if Minnesota can do it and Michigan can do it, then Wisconsin can do it and we can do it responsibly. These are not short-term jobs. This mine is going to bring good paying jobs to members of the 34th Assembly District and South. And I'm all for it. But let's do it responsibly. Sure, if we have to bring in other aspects, other people to talk to us, we can get it all on the same page. But let's think first about the people who live in the 34th Assembly District here in northern Wisconsin. And this is a fantastic opportunity, which will trickle down all the way to Milwaukee. These same companies are looking at, you know, buying Wisconsin goods. So I think it'd be beneficial. And these are, like I say, long-term jobs, lots of jobs. And I if Minnesota can do it, Wisconsin can do it, as well as Michigan.
Okay. Merlin Van Buren?
I'd like to start first with a quote by Aldo Leopold. "We abuse land because we see it as a commodity belonging to us. When we see land as a community to which we belong, we may begin to use it with love and respect." So bearing that in mind, mining is important to our way of life. But it has to be done responsibly. And I agree with what the state senate is doing right now, which is looking at iron ore mining and building the legislation from the ground up. Instead of taking the current mining regulations and kind of picking at it and deciding what we can do away with, they're starting from the ground and building the regulations that we need. And my thought is, we need to protect the groundwater, the wetlands, the runoff, and any air emissions. The effect of the mine should not extend beyond the mine site, would be my basis for any regulations.
Okay, that was Merlin Van Buren. Next, Todd Albano.
I fully support the idea of responsible mining. We need minerals. If you drive a car, a bicycle, use electricity, those are all things that were made with metal that came out of the ground. However, I believe that most people's opposition to the idea of mining is the risk involved and the fact that although every time we've had a mine and we've been promised up and down that there are safeguards in place to protect us or an oil well, as soon as tragedy befalls us and all those safeguards are out the window and we suffer huge environmental impact and cost for cleanup, nobody ever seems to be held responsible. This person built that part and shipped it over here to so-and-so and nothing ever gets done. So the promise that, oh, we have the DNR and we have the EPA and we have these regulations means nothing to the people anymore because the public trust has been broken. So if we can put some actual standards and accountabilities in place and see them perform, I believe that everybody's fear of the mining and the potential that comes along with it will be at ease, and they'll be accepting of the mine, and then we'll be ready to embark on the monetary benefits of having one. I would also like to say that for many years I lived in Alaska, and when you took natural resources out of Alaska, the people all took part. They all got a dividend check for the resources that those people who live in that state own. I don't think the people in Wisconsin are in favor of having a corporation come in here and take all the natural resources and minerals and walk away to a huge profit and have us left with an environmental cleanup site. And I think that's a lot of what mining is about. So I think if the people share in the potential for profit and benefit from the mine, they'll also be much more accepting of the idea.
Okay, Todd Albano and Kevin Fitzpatrick.
Well, I think mining's a necessary evil right now. I mean, you look at the technology we have, the things that we use a lot of metals, rare earth metals, all different types of metals. But yet I think we need to look as in the Native American culture and look at seven generations. What is going to happen in seven generations? Yes, it's great jobs now. It's immediate jobs now. And maybe it's jobs for 100 years. But what about 200 years? What about 300 years? I think we really need to look at responsible mining, and I agree, we do need to mine. We need to make that happen. We can't let corporations dictate our mining laws. Any mining laws that are in the state of Wisconsin need to be developed by the people of the state of Wisconsin. And if we can do that, and we can feel comfortable that we have mining to the safest that we can make it, then I think we should go ahead and do mining. But until we can make sure that it's safe for our future generations, then we really need to think about how we're going to make this process move forward.
Any rebuttal to any statements? Okay. Next up, we'll have Craig Mandley, and you'll be directing your question this time to Rob Swearingen.
Rob, right now, Wisconsin's voter ID law is currently in a quagmire of the judicial system, and we don't really know where it's going to end up. Do you believe that the voter ID law that came to light last year should be upheld?
I do, and oddly enough, it's being held up by a judge in Madison. But I do support the voter ID law. I just don't believe that it's an imposition for a voter to go to the polls and have to produce an ID.
Okay. Next, Merlin Van Buren.
I disagree with the law. Totally. This is basically a law looking for a problem. Our Attorney General, Van Hollen, looked for incidents of people voting illegally and basically found none. I think he found two examples throughout the state. So there really is no need for this law. It's basically voter suppression. Voting is a right. And so requiring an ID, people compare it to starting a bank account and so forth. Starting a bank account is not a right. Voting is one of your rights. And so in Wisconsin, we've always had a history of allowing more people to vote, getting more people to vote. And that should be our incentive to get a higher turnout, to get more people at the polls and voting. What we should be doing is looking at ways where we can increase the turnout instead of looking at ways we can decrease the turnout. We should be looking at weekend voting, online voting, which would be really radical, but just opening up so we get more people voting instead of less people voting.
Todd Albano.
I believe that the voting law is something that was unfortunate because the legislature should be looking to solve problems, and there really wasn't a voter fraud problem. So we wasted a lot of time and resources doing something that we really didn't get a value for at the end of the day. And I believe it is in direct contradiction of the suffrage clause of the Wisconsin State Constitution, which basically says the legislature has the right to restrict voting in only two circumstances. If you're mentally incompetent and a ward of the state, or if you're a felon. And I don't believe that in any other instance do they have the right to inhibit anyone's right to vote, which this law does. So I agree that it's unconstitutional and it should not be upheld. And that is the basis for the lawsuit of the Wisconsin League of Women Voters, and I have to agree with that.
Okay. Kevin
As a middle class white male, I look at the voter ID law and say, yeah, that's a great idea. We should have voter ID. But then I look at the population I serve, and I look at disenfranchised youth. I look at people living in poverty, and it really becomes an issue. We don't live in their shoes, and so I think we want to have, again, everybody have that opportunity. As Marilyn said, everybody have that opportunity to vote. When you look at our recall election, if I recall the numbers correctly, we had 2.3 million people vote in that election. We had 1.8 million people that didn't vote. Why didn't they vote? Just think about if a voter ID law had been in place at that time, how many more people wouldn't have taken that opportunity to vote in that election. I think we need to find more ways to get our voters out to vote, and I think the voter ID law, as was written, was a way to keep people from voting.
Okay, any rebuttal? Okay, well, we'll move to the next question. This is Matt Doyle toward Merlin Van Buren.
Okay, we've talked about education a lot tonight, but I think one of the things that we run into up in this area in the 34th Assembly District, the Northwoods, whatever, is kind of the brain drain. Young people getting an education and leaving, head to Milwaukee, head out of state, or go off to college and then not come back. What's a way that you can prevent that from happening to keep the young people who grow up here and maybe turn into you, Merlin or Rob, or someone who has lived here your whole life or most of your life and want to stay in this area, the 34th Assembly District?
Well, let me relate a little bit of my life experience. I grew up in Waupun. I graduated from high school in 1978, and then I went to UW-Madison. I graduated from there in 1982. And I moved down to Chicago area, and I lived in the Chicago area for 12 years. My wife and I moved back up here because she took a job at the hospital in the area. She's a speech pathologist. And we wanted to move back to Wisconsin from Chicago area. We were in the suburbs because we wanted to get to a good place to raise our boys. They were 6 years old and 2 years old at the time. So that's why we moved back to Wisconsin. And we ended up here in Rhinelander, and we've lived here for 17 years now. And it's a great place to raise kids. And I think that's what we have to promote, is the area and what we offer. We have to maintain our great schools up here so that young people with families want to move up here and start their companies up here or move their businesses up here. And that's the key. It's a great place to have a family and to raise a family. And that's what I found through my experience. I did my time in Chicago. I call that my time in purgatory. And then we moved up here, and it's just a great place to live, and that's what we have to promote. And yes, there is a brain drain because you don't have the high-tech jobs, especially people that go like to UW-Madison or one of the other major universities. We don't have those high-tech companies, so we have to somehow try and get those back up here and get those businesses up here.
Okay, thank you, Merlin. Todd Albano?
I think the two biggest factors as I talk to our young people are opportunity and entertainment. I think those are the two biggest motives for people moving out of the area. And if we look at things like high-speed internet and working from home and having better jobs up here, I think that is the single biggest thing we can do. And the other one is entertainment or culture. And with those better jobs and with the added people that would take an interest in our area, I think the culture and the entertainment aspect of the area is going to change and help contribute to that as well.
Okay, and Kevin?
Well, it's kind of interesting you mention that because I have a daughter who's a senior in high school, and right now she's being recruited by some rather prestigious universities around the country, including the University of Wisconsin. And I try and think about her life in the future. Is she going to come back to the Northwoods? And I'm not sure if she will, yet I hope she does. Because this is a wonderful place to raise a family. And I think when she graduates from college and she looks back on her life in the northern part of the state of Wisconsin, I hope that she'll say, yeah, this is some place that I want to raise my family. It's some place I want to be. And I think the things that will draw her back are just the things we've talked about. The beautiful environment we live in. Hopefully technology that will keep up with the things that she's going to want in her life. I think that if we have those things, if we have the high speed, if we have opportunities for entertainment, like Todd had mentioned, I believe we will retain those people. But until that happens, I don't think that many people realize what they've got until they've gone, and gone for a significant amount of time, and then all of a sudden realize, wow, this is really a special place, and I need to come back.
And Rob Swearingen.
Well, I never left.
I graduated high school in 1981 here and never left because I'm in love with the Northwoods. But I certainly do agree with these gentlemen as well. I believe that the young people right now, I have a daughter that graduated Rainier High School. She's attending Nicolet College currently, hoping to get down to Green Bay next year because she wants to be an ultrasound technician, which I am very impressed by. And hopefully it wouldn't be great to have her come back here and practice in that field right here in Rhinelander or in the Assembly District or in the Northwoods somewhere. But I think to attract her and others to stay or come back would be we're going to need those jobs, those family-sustaining jobs, industry. I think the entertainment portion of it, since I'm in the tourism business, I think that's a great addition to this discussion. But how about cutting some of the red tape for these companies to get up to the Northwoods? Let's cut some of those regulations. Let's make it possible for these companies to come in and build these factories or start these businesses to attract these young kids to stay.
Okay, any rebuttal?
I'd just like to rebut on the red tape. When people mention let's cut the red tape, I would like them to be very specific as to what red tape they want to cut. Because cutting red tape is what got us into this economic mess we're in right now. So it's easy to say, let's cut red tape, let's cut regulations. Be very specific. What regulations? What red tape?
That was Merlin Van Buren. Anyone else?
I'd like to comment. Our oldest daughter graduated as a medical assistant and lives about a mile from us. Our youngest daughter just returned after spending her junior year as a foreign exchange student in Thailand. And she came back and said, wow, Dad, you know what? I kept saying, oh, I got to get out of here. And now I realize what a beautiful and opportunistic place this is to live. And I think that after college, I'll return to raise my family here. So that's something that now that she's gotten a chance to go out and see what's out there and appreciate what she had, she, I believe, has plans to come back home.
We have time for about 4 minutes for one more question. So we'll have one more question and no rebuttal, just one more question. Kyle will ask it, and it will be directed toward Todd Albano, and then we'll have closing statements after that.
What's one piece of legislation you would get behind immediately if elected?
And that will be directed toward Todd.
Boy, that sure is a tough call there. I think if there's anything that I am going to get behind, I would say it's progress toward education. And I can't give you a specific piece of legislation, but I think that's by far should be our top priority and would like to see that as my top priority. And although I don't believe that if elected we dictate the decisions that we make, that we're representative, we have a duty to be strong advocates for what we believe in and help to educate the people that we represent so that they can make good choices and take the time to get the facts and figures straight so we know what we're voting on. And that would be my top priority.
Kevin Fitzpatrick.
Again, I guess my top priority would be education. I mean, really, education is our future. When we look at wanting to have good jobs, we need to have good employees. And our schools are the people that help develop those good employees. If our schools go down, we won't have a quality workforce, and we won't have companies that want to come to our state to produce whatever they want to do. I mean, we need to have quality employees, and that comes from our school system, having strong schools, having a quality workforce in our schools, and having the support of parents and our communities to make our schools what they can be.
Rob Swearingen.
Kyle, I think that's a great question, and I would say that no specific legislation. I would look at every piece of legislation that come out, and before I got behind any of it, I'd say, what would it do for the jobs in the 34th Assembly District? So whether that's the iron ore mine, which certainly has the red tape that I was indicating earlier, if we got behind that and let's get that going, or if it's something to impact the tourism business. But I would look at every piece of legislation specifically relating to this Assembly District to see how it can help the members here in the district.
And Merlin Van Buren.
I would again go with the education funding. Last 2 years we slashed education funding. We gave most of that money away in tax breaks to wealthy large corporations. We got absolutely nothing with that giveaway. So we need to look at education funding to fund that properly, and that includes our K-12 schools, to make sure that we're giving our children the education they need for now and in the future. We need to properly fund our technical colleges so we can train the workers for the jobs that are available today. And then our UW system, make sure that it continues to be the best in the world. So we need to restore that education funding so that we're ready for today and for tomorrow.
Well, that's all we have time for questions. It's been a very quick hour, and we have closing statements coming up next. And we'll start with, these will be 1 minute. And Todd, you'll start.
Okay, I'd like to say thank you for having us and putting this information out there for the public. And I, in the past, have had Republican control, and I've had Democratic control, and I have been dissatisfied with the unwillingness or inability of these two political powerhouses to get anything done. I believe the idea of representative government is people representing themselves. That's why I'm running. That's why I'm running as an independent. And I'd say to the people of the 34th Assembly District, if you're happy with the way things are going, then keep on voting the same way. But if you want something different, you have to do something different. It was Albert Einstein that said insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. So I'm encouraging people to look in a positive direction, represent a true servant of the people, and I believe that we can do great things.
That was Independent Todd Albano. Kevin Fitzpatrick, Independent candidate.
Again, thank you for this opportunity. I really welcome the chance to speak. And I think what one of the things I think people need to recognize is I don't know what the employment is of the rest of my my fellow candidates here except for Mr. Swearingen, but I can tell you that I'm probably the only person here that has to give up their day job. And I really love what I do. I love to teach and I love to coach, but I'm willing to make that sacrifice to be your representative in Madison because I think that we need to make some changes there, and I think that I'm a person who can look at things in a rational way and really try and pull people together. It's been kind of funny. I've had several parents come up to me of athletes that I coach and say, our kids are saying don't vote for you because they don't want to lose me as a coach. And I really take that with great respect and honor that they would think that way, but I really hope that I do get their votes. I hope that I get the people listening's votes. If you like what you hear, please consider me for your vote. The thing you're going to find is you're going to get someone who's very honest, who has integrity, and who really listens to both sides. Thank you.
Up next, Republican Rob Swearingen.
Well, thank you again. Once again, WXPR, Ken, and the panel. This has been great. We get the message out to the voters. This is a great opportunity. Here again, I guess the closing statement is pretty much the opening statement. I was born in the district. I graduated high school here in the district. I'm a successful small business owner. I have been elected by my peers to represent over 5,000 small businesses across the state of Wisconsin. And I want to be the next voice of the Northwoods in Madison to fill Dan Meyer's shoes, which, by the way, I thank him for what he's done in the Assembly in the last 14 years. I think he's done a great job, and I would like to be able to be the next one to be the voice. And I think one of the problems we have in Madison is too many people have signed the back of a check, and not enough of them have written the front.
Okay, Rob Swearingen, and Democrat Merlin Van Buren.
Okay, first of all, thank you again to WXPR and the panel for this opportunity. I believe that you deserve the best representation possible in Madison. You deserve someone who is going to represent you and not special interest groups. You deserve someone who knows and cares about the Northwoods, someone who cares about your schools, your community, and your family. You deserve someone with the experience it takes to be a representative in Madison, someone who has been active, involved, and a leader in many different community organizations. When you vote this fall, don't vote based on party or based on a single issue. Vote for the candidate that will truly represent you the way you deserve to be represented in Madison. And if I haven't answered all your questions, you want to learn more about me, go to my website, merlinvanburen.com. I need your vote on November 6th so I can represent you in Madison.
Well, thank you for joining us. These have been the candidates for the 34th District Assembly seat. The election day is November 6th. I'd like to thank our media panel, and I'm Ken Krall.